Welcome to the Ethics Experts, where we're elevating ethics and compliance and HR to the strategic level it's supposed to be.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Ethics Experts. If it's your first time joining us, welcome. And if you are a returning subscriber, hello, friend. I hope you're having an amazing day. You see what happens when you subscribe to the Ethics Experts? You get a bonus greeting on every single episode. So hit that subscribe button. The next episode, that bonus greeting will be just for you. I am here with the man, Matt Elton. How are you?
Hi, nice to be here, Nick. I'm absolutely brilliant.
Good, very good. So welcome on the Ethics Experts. Pretty excited to chat with you. You are a reg tech thought leader. You're a practitioner. You founded an international group focused on reg tech. How would you introduce yourself, Matt?
I'd say I'm firstly a technology leader with a focus on cybersecurity, data privacy, governance, risk, regulatory compliance. So really focused on how to use technology to unlock real business value in those areas of compliance, and particular focus around regulatory technology, as you mentioned. So I suppose the last few years I've been very focused on how to get real value out of using technology in the regulatory space. As you mentioned, I was one of the co-founders of the International RegTech Association. I'm also co-founder of the RegTech Accelerator, which helps RegTech firms to grow and to scale and to internationalize their propositions.
Very cool. So, so much to talk about with you. This is such a hot button issue. It's kind of top of mind for so many folks as we're swimming in these, you know, we've like found ourselves in these lakes of data. Don't know where the data came from. Don't know if we have the right controls on it. Don't know if we're using it in the appropriate ways, depending on what jurisdiction there is. So there's a lot we're going to get into. But before we dive into that, tell me a little bit about this accelerator, because these are really cool. These are really cool things that have sort of come around in the last kind of 10 to 15 years. How do you help these reg tech businesses sort of scale up? And what are you really focused on in terms of helping them accelerate?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that differentiates our accelerator from, you know, many of the accelerators out there, which, you know, all have their own specific focus, is we tend to focus very much on practical assistance. So taking things like product market strategy, doing market research, taking market knowledge and helping firms to align their propositions with the needs of the market, helping them to make informed decisions about market strategy. We work with marketing, with doing actual creating actual content that can be used for positioning products and services, or even for generating and nurturing specific leads. We help with sales, so taking those leads, engaging with prospects, really working the pipeline to turn those prospects into real sales. We have a back office operation that can help firms do things like RFI, RFP responses, public sector bids, things that firms, you know, if you've not done it before, it's something of an art, and it can be quite daunting if you're faced with an RFP process and you don't know how to respond, and you don't know how to necessarily how to position yourself in the best possible way. So that's the back office service. And then the other side of it is all about international strategy. So when firms are ready to explore new markets, looking at which markets make sense, looking at how a firm's products fit with the competitive landscape in those other markets, and indeed helping firms once they make a decision to go to a new market, helping them to position themselves, helping them to get the exposure that they're looking for, and ultimately helping them to win business in those new markets.
So the thing I kept hearing as you're describing this is helping, and you know, the thing that I'm always struck with in the ethics and compliance, for lack of a better term, this broad umbrella under which many of us find ourselves, is that it's a really unique market that we're in. There's an opportunity for us to help each other that doesn't really exist in a lot of other markets. You know, there's not these marketing accelerators where marketing folks are working with marketing folks from other companies to really help them. We have a really special thing in this community, and I love the expression of that. you know, in terms of this this accelerator, how did you guys see the need for this? What was the catalyst that caused you to say, hey, we should really help some of these folks kind of get up this curve quicker and not have to reinvent the wheel on their own?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it's been a gradual progression. So as I mentioned to you, you know, I started helping one or two firms. That actually was what got me into the space that led me to be one of the co-founders of the International RegTech Association. And I think what I discovered was that there's a lot of firms out there, probably today, about 1,500 firms identify themselves as RegTech firms globally. Wow. And they have some fantastic insights, some fantastic technology. They have some fantastic people behind them. But often they're not necessarily on the radar. People don't necessarily know that they exist. Mm-hmm. People perhaps even have a perception that the service they offer or the product they offer is one thing, and actually it's something else. And so, you know, you can have you can be really good at producing solutions, and you know, most of these firms are really good at producing very high quality, very very valuable regulatory solutions, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're good at marketing, doesn't necessarily mean that you're good at sales, doesn't necessarily mean that you're good at scaling a sales operation. Right. When it comes to internationalizing, and we haven't talked yet about my own career, but I've spent my career working all over the world. There are things that are different in different jurisdictions, from how you do business, how you approach people in terms of making a sale, how you position yourself. Right. And if you haven't been there and you haven't done that, you know, it's something that is quite hard and quite expensive to learn. And so, you know, like any business accelerator, and you picked up on the term helping, it's all about helping people. It's not necessarily about dictating there's one way and it's this way. Right. It's about understanding the position of where the firm is today, where they want to go, and in what ways we can assist in that journey. And every firm is different. Every journey is different. That is absolutely, you know, that's absolutely fine. But anything you can do to help people to make the right decisions, to make the progress towards the growth goals that they have in mind, will help them to be more successful, and ultimately will avoid people making expensive mistakes. And you know, that obviously doesn't help anyone.
Right.
You're right. I think the regulatory compliance space is an area where there is a lot of opportunity for collaboration. There's a lot of opportunity for people to work together. You know, regulatory compliance, you know, it probably isn't the first thing you think of when you think of competitive advantage, but it's one of the things that every firm needs to deal with, and every firm needs to deal with properly. So,
right.
You know, it makes sense in those areas to work together, and that's true also for technology firms, where firms might have complementing technologies that. When they get together, can solve more of a challenge, can produce more of an impact in the, you know, in the firm, in the market, and so forth. So that was kind of what led us to the RegTech Accelerator, and over time, we've added some additional pieces to that. So we're also covering, as I might have mentioned, cybersecurity, cyber risk, privacy tech.
Yeah.
You know, the whole gambit of governance, risk, and compliance. So a lot going on.
Yeah, I mean, in this whole marketplace that you're in, this pool that you're swimming in, so to speak, has changed so much over the last 15 to 20 years. Talk to us, you know, you're now kind of at the top of this pyramid of sort of authority and expertise and thought leadership. What got you to start climbing this pyramid? How did you get into this game? And what was that circuitous path like for you?
Oh, I mean, it's a great question. You know, I it's funny. When I first started, you know, I'd been working in big firms, even in some smaller firms. But I said, look, in order for me to be successful in this space, I need to be known as well. Like we talk about the firms that we're trying to help need to be known. I also need to be known by the industry. I need to be known by the technology firms. I also need to be known by the you know, ultimately the buyer community. And so I started looking at, well, how can I become, almost on the radar? And did things like writing content for both under my own name and under other, kind of ghostwriting, if you will.
Yeah.
So that's where it started. And of course, you know, social media being what it is today, when you start talking about a topic and when you start talking about quite a niche topic, people start to notice and people start to reach out to you and you start to have some really interesting conversations with people, and that kind of, you know, one thing led to another. And I suppose in the last year, I've won quite a few awards and accolades and so forth. Identified by a few people as one of the leading influencers. I'm in the LexisNexis Risks top 10 RegTech influencers, for example. Onalytica, who are well known in the influencer marketing space, listed me in their who's who in data management for data privacy and security. They included me in who's who in risk management for governance, risk and compliance. So I became quite well known. I hadn't necessarily quite set out to be quite so visible, but everything helps.
Yeah, heavy is the head though, right?
That's it.
So, you know, that's such an interesting thing to me. So you're in this space, you see this opportunity, and you see this opportunity to kind of put yourself out there to try to become a thought leader. And look, I mean, we're at the kind of, you know, we're at the other side of it now where you're on these, you know, high profile lists and, you know, you've sort of achieved this thought leader status that a lot of people try to put on themselves. What was that like when you first started putting yourself out there? What was it like when you were like, all right, I got to start generating content or I need to be known? There was some catalyst that caused you to go from, you know, presumably a couple hundred, you know, followers on LinkedIn to now, you know, kind of 20,000 and you being on all these lists. What was the nature of that catalyst and what was your drive to kind of try to ascend to that position?
Well, I think in a certain way, it was being in the right place at the right time. So, you know, I'd gotten into the RegTech industry while the RegTech industry was itself developing. And by being one of the co-founders of the International RegTech Association, perhaps that gave me the ear of some people. But what I found was people were actually, I was saying things, people were actually listening.
Yeah, amazing.
that was quite amazing. You know, you think, you know, in the world, you know, I'm just one voice, but you start talking about things, people are listening to it.
Yeah.
Okay. You better watch what you say.
Be careful. Right. Yeah. It's all there. It's all there in the ether forever. I read an interesting article. I mean, you got a ton of writings. You have a ton of articles out there. I read a recent one about sort of the intersection of ESG and RegTech. And I'd love to kind of dive into that. You know, ESG is sort of top of mind for, it's a buzzword now. It's kind of in the conversation. And I think the seeds have been planted for that perhaps 30, even 40 years ago, but now it seems to be kind of coalescing into a thing. What are some of the, you know, RegTech considerations that you see people not kind of making with respect to their ESG initiatives? And how do you see RegTech sort of interweaving with a more mature ESG, you know, program that'll be here in 5 or 10 years?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'd say that there's two sides to it. One is the firms themselves, so the big regulated firms who will have now ESG targets, they'll have ESG obligations. You know, you see regulators around the world jumping on ESG as something that they expect the firms they regulate to be doing something with.
Right.
Now you've got to produce evidence. You've got to be transparent. You've got to demonstrate that you are taking these seriously, and that could be everything from on the environmental side, you know, are we using clean energy? Are we behaving ourselves? all the way through the social aspects. You know, who are we employing? Are we treating them fairly? Are we treating them equally? Are we giving equal opportunities across the board? And of course, governance. You know, like everything in governance, are we doing what we're supposed to do? And are we doing it the right way? So there's one side to it, which is helping firms to collect all those metrics, to collect all that data, to demonstrate in real time where they are. You know, boards are going to be taking a big interest in, if they're not already, they certainly will be, where are we as a firm? Have we done what we need to do in order to meet our obligations? And you increasingly, you can't do that with Excel spreadsheets, bits of paper. it just that you're dealing with such an amount of data that it just trying to do it, but in any other way is not going to work. So that's one side. So it's a huge tech opportunity in terms of collecting and making sense of that data. And the other side of it, of course, is when looking at investments, when looking at what you're going to invest in, you're going to be looking at, or whether that be advisors or whether that be individual investors, you're going to be looking at, well, where are these firms vis-a-vis ESG? Are they something? If I want a very ESG centric portfolio, I'm gonna need evidence, or my advisor is gonna need evidence, and that's a whole area where I would see a lot of activity in terms of producing solutions to help fund managers, to help advisors to understand, you know, where are particular funds vis-a-vis, or where are the firms that comprise those funds, right, vis-a-vis their ESG obligations.
So just curious, there's obviously a ton of challenges with respect to like comparability between firms with respect to their ESG initiatives. How do you think this is going to settle out? I mean, 10 years from now, we're probably not going to be blindly feeling our way through this ESG forest. There's going to be some paths, you know, kind of carved out of it. What do you think it's going to be? Some kind of an ESG score? Do you think there will be an E score, an S score, and a G score? Like, how do you think we're going to be able to overcome the incomparability that exists between disparate operations and different jurisdictions and different sort of markets and different regulatory, you know, challenges that guys have to sort of sort through? How do we boil that down to something that we can compare across the board?
Yeah, well, I think the obvious thing is standards, and you know, it's going to, if it doesn't come from the regulator side, which it probably will, but if it doesn't, it's going to end up coming from market demand. So, you know, if you are trying to compare, as you described, and you're trying to compare cross jurisdiction, potentially cross industry, cross vertical, and they're all calculated in different ways, and all the information is exposed in different ways, it's going to become impossible to understand what's going on, and furthermore, you know, it's just going to be unworkable. So, yeah, you know, as like anything, common standards will emerge. There'll be some, you know, probably some competition across jurisdictions, be, you know, be standards in different jurisdictions. But, you know, at some point, if we are in a global world, we're going to have to produce those figures on a globally comparable way.
Right. When you look at, you know, let me ask you this. When do you feel like we're kind of behind the eight ball with respect to reg tech? And this is going to be kind of a leading question, so bear with me here, but it feels like we've kind of hit some kind of a tipping point, and there's so much data and we don't really know what to do with it. It's not like we built the scaffolding around our businesses so that those structures could account for and help us handle sort of in responsible ways in, you know, most all cases, the amount of data that we're now swimming in. What is it going to take, you know, if my thesis is right, what is it going to take for us to kind of wrangle that back in? And what's, you know, from a Pareto perspective, what are like the biggest rocks that we need to move to kind of achieve that most quickly, you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think, you know, the RegTech industry obviously has evolved over the years. You know, if we go back to its start, you know, it was really focused on providing solutions that help with specific regulatory issues. So I need to produce a report for this. I need to do a, I don't know. I need to do some right. customer screening in this area. I need to do, I need to produce a particular report. I need to produce some particular figures. I need to, those obviously produced a certain amount of value for firms who had that challenge, who had that need. And that was really the start of the industry. But as time has gone on, firms, of course, many firms operate in multiple jurisdictions. Many firms operate globally. Many firms have multiple similar obligations. You know, if we take something like regulatory reporting, for instance, I was talking with I suppose you'd say global, but a North American focused firm recently, who were telling me that they have 84 different solutions for Jeez. producing regulatory reports. Now, that comes from the fact that at some point, you know, it's been done regulation by regulation, jurisdiction by jurisdiction, and they've ended up with 84 different solutions. Now, okay, it probably lets them do what needs to be done, but it is very difficult to manage, and it is right. very expensive to manage. And of course, you know, there's multiple vendors involved, multiple supplier relationships to manage. And we look, well, where has the industry gone? What are we talking about today? Is much more focused on holistic solutions, is much more focused on not a solution for this particular reporting obligation, but a solution that covers, for example, a wealth of multi-regulation, multi-jurisdictional reporting obligations. And those kind of solutions will create far more value, because when it comes to a regulatory change, or it comes to a new regulation coming along, it says, okay, I need to produce a report that looks like this. If you have a good handle on the data you have, you know where the golden copy of each of those pieces of data is within the organization. If you know where, basically, you know where to find it and you know what it is, well, to produce a report that contains that is only incremental. It's not produced, it's not running around the organization and where are we going to find, right. A, B, C, and X, Y, Z. We know where the data is. We put it together. We produce the report. Is it in the right format? Does it do, does it satisfy the need? And I think, across multiple spaces, what we're starting to see is much more complete solutions to real challenges. And that, I'm talking a lot about reporting, but that will also apply in other areas as well.
Yeah, I think you referred to this as RegTech 4.0. Is that right?
I did when we were having a chat before. Yeah.
So why don't we back up and explain it to me like I'm five. What is RegTech and how has it, we've kind of talked about it at a high level, but what does RegTech 4.0 have in it principally that was missing from 3.0 or 2.0 or whatever?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things was people had very high expectations when the RegTech industry first came along. Regulatory compliance is very expensive.
Right.
I've seen figures ranging from 10% of your revenues all the way up to 20% of a firm's revenue being spent on regulatory compliance. That is no small amount right. of money to spend. And people were spending that money quite often in terms of throwing people at the problem. So let's get armies of compliance people in to help us either to solve a new regulation or to solve a situation that we've got ourselves into. We've all seen very big firms, some of the big issues that they've got into through. And throwing people at a problem, it's very expensive, very tedious, and of course isn't sustainable. So I remember one firm I worked with had a particular issue. They hired a huge team of consultants. The team of consultants did a big cleanup job, got everything in order, But the regulator concerned came back and looked at it and said, well, okay, it might be in order right now, but what happens tomorrow? What happens in a week? What happens in a year when all these guys have gone away? And what they were looking for, of course, was, it's about process and about technology. It's not only about people. And I suppose coming back to the regtech industry, what were people looking? People were saying, "Well, look, there's a huge opportunity here. A lot of money is being spent on compliance. If we can use technology in a smart way, we can potentially spend less, but we might also be able to get some value out of the data that we're working with." And I suppose there were. I'll go back probably 3 years now. In my mind, it's quite a pivotal period when people say, "Well, look, this technology is here and it has huge potential,
right.
But it's actually not delivering it's not delivering." And that I think has caused a change in thought, a change in approach. It's perhaps the RegTech 2.0 moment we're not just producing pieces of technology to help in compliance, but actually there is an opportunity to really transform regulatory compliance using technology. And that set about a different way of thinking and a different set of solutions. I think probably the other factors, obviously changing regulatory landscape and continually a continual wave of new regulation, new obligations that firms need to deal with, obviously has increased demand. And of course, we shouldn't underestimate the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic, which has completely transformed operating models. So, we went over some, 17 months ago, overnight from being a very office-based, very supervised in person industry, particularly when we start talking about back office operations, to something that was suddenly about as disparate as could possibly be. And you've got people who've spent decades sitting in a very supervised environment, suddenly, sitting in their home office, sitting at their kitchen table, sitting on the couch, doing very sensitive back office work. And that has had a huge change. We can call it digital transformation, or we can call it something else. But it has been a huge shift in terms of operating model. And if you have that kind of shift in operating model, you need to change the way in which you regulate. You need to change the way in which you supervise. You need to change the way in which, as a compliance officer, you look after that whole operation. And that has generated a whole new demand for tools and solutions, which are more focused on well, how do I in this new paradigm, how do I view my whole organization? How do I view the compliance of my whole organization? How do I ensure that the organization is operating in the right way? How do you, for example, in an environment where everyone is working from home, how do you create a compliance culture, and how do you maintain a compliance culture? It's quite different than you would have done even 2 years ago, where you were probably doing that in a face-to-face and an office environment.
Yeah. Let's double click on that a little bit. It's like 10 years of change has happened over the last year. We're playing catch up. Our data is kind of all over the place. People, like you said, we're in these sort of in-office structures. They're in their out-of-office structures. And we have this sort of broader challenge as we shift into RegTech 4.0, or which kind of coincides with this compliance 3.0, which is really about a holistic view, which is really about effectiveness. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you know, there's, to your point, I think there's a massive opportunity for us to kind of show our value in our workplaces more and turn some of those light bulbs on at the top. And something you've written a lot about and talked a lot about is creating real business value with these kinds of tools. So first of all, you know, why do you think it's such a hard case to make? You know, I mean, we're talking to presumably smart people on the other side of the table, right? Whose light bulbs we're trying to turn on and show that like there's value here. Why is it like, why do our wheels spin so much when talking to these people? And what tactics have you seen that help kind of accelerate that light bulb turning on quicker?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think regulatory compliance is not an easy sell in itself. So, you know, if you're selling to the C-level, you're selling to the executive in a firm, selling, I want to spend more money in regulatory compliance, where a firm might already be spending 15% of its annual revenues, simply to, you know, in many cases, simply to continue to be able to sell the products and services it sells. That's quite difficult. You know, you might have a very forward-thinking compliance officer who absolutely sees, absolutely buys all of the things that we've just talked about, having a holistic view, knowing the what is going on in the organization, knowing that all the things we're doing from a regulatory perspective are being done correctly, are being done, you know, in a compliant fashion, but. You know, you're already a cost center, and trying to spend more money in something that is already a cost center is not an easy sell. That said, if you can start to show, and this is one of the things, as you picked up on, that I've written about extensively, if you can start to show a business value. You know, I mentioned competitive advantage earlier. You know, people don't necessarily think of regulatory compliance as a competitive advantage, but if you can show some show some other benefits that come from doing what you need to do from a compliance perspective, you can start to sell that to other people in the organization. You can start to sell that to commercial people, to chief financial officers, chief revenue officers. You mentioned a few times having a good handle on the data we have, but it's more than that. If you have a good handle on the data you have, you know, are you actually making the most of that data? Buried in that compliance data are actual business insights. There's customer insights. There's insights into the business itself. You know, the products. We might be talking about financial products. You know, what are we selling? How successful are those products? You know, could we? If we adapted the product offering slightly, would they be better suited to the type of clients that we have? Would we be able to, it's a big focus, as you probably know at the moment, in terms of best interest and demonstrating that what we do is in line with the client's best interest. Now, you know, the more we know about what we sell, the more we know about the client, the more suitable those products will be inherently. And so demonstrating they were in the best interest of the client becomes easier. And we may even find the more we know about a client, we might be able to sell them things that we previously couldn't sell them, that we were perhaps even afraid to sell them for compliance reasons. 10 years of regulatory change. What has actually happened over 10 years is a lot of products were, the scope of those products was shrunk. The type of clients we serve often was shrunk down. We stopped dealing with things that might get us into regulatory situations, because the risk, without the data, the risk of mis-selling is too high. The risk of dealing with somebody we shouldn't deal with is too high. Well, if you start to use technology to allow us to sell appropriate products to those types of customers. And I'm not, you know, I'm not at all saying we should sell any product to any customer, but selling appropriate products to those customers, we might find that we can service segments that we've shied away from. We might be able to sell products and product types that we've you know, that we perhaps abandoned 10 years ago, and we might even start to be able to offer products and services that differentiate us in the market, so thereby opening up new revenue opportunities. And if you can start to show, well, actually, the underlying technology that we use for regulatory compliance can actually open up new business opportunities, that's a whole, a complete other discussion, and it's a complete other discussion with complete other people. So then we start having a discussion, you know, with the CFOs, with the CEOs, about opening new business opportunities. How many new business opportunities means ultimately, you know, more revenue and the firm doing better. And I think that is kind of where I see the future of regulatory technology. It's something more than just simply checking the box to say, yes, we are compliant.
So much in what you just said, you know, I love that sort of path, that persuasion path of saying, hey, yes, this is a seatbelt for sure, but if we can do this, it's going to open up our eyes and, you know, it's kind of like some nitrous in our engine and help us to kind of run this car a little bit faster. That expansion of this sort of myopic, sort of one-dimensional view of what our roles can be in our broader business helps us really elevate to this more strategic point within our companies a lot more quickly. And as you're kind of talking about that, I was just struck by, you know, this sort of, I don't know what to call it. Call it the status quo factor, where we just kind of get used to, you know, if you're riding a bicycle and the tires are, you know, 10% flat and you just have been riding that bike for days and days and days, you kind of get used to the extra work you have to do to kind of push that thing forward. And then when you fill those tires up, only then are you like, oh my gosh, I was expending so much extra effort without even knowing it. You know what I'm saying? That same thing is happening in all these nooks and crannies in our business. It's happening with our data. It's happening with our employee engagement. It's happening with our broad compliance function and our inclusivity and all these little aspects that ethics and compliance kind of reaches through the organization to touch. And I think it's just such an interesting dynamic to overcome this feeling. You know, I mean, I guess at some level, think about the CEO is like, well, I don't need glasses. And it's like, well, you do need glasses. But he has to go through that sort of eye test to see how much more clear he would see with these new, you know, bifocals or whatever. That's the opportunity I think we have to help them kind of look at the world a little bit different. And, you know, ultimately, you know, I'm kind of an econ guy, so I nerd out on econ sometimes, but we're talking about kind of minimizing or reducing the dead weight loss that's existing in our business at some level. So there's some dead weight loss due to data. There's some insights that we're not getting because we're not processing it right, or we don't have the right tools in place, not only to your point, check that sort of regulatory box, but to gain the insights that are just, I mean, they're there, they're on the servers, they're in the company. That's just haven't uncovered them yet. And it's it's a really interesting dynamic. And it seems sometimes kind of a steep mountain to climb, because we're cost centers and we have to, you know, turn these light bulbs on at the top. But man, how powerful is it when you get that flicker in that light bulb and someone sees it and they're like, let's try it. And then you can really move the thing forward.
Mm-hmm. That's it. It's absolutely right. Yeah. It's transforming the business from transforming the business of compliance, but also using compliance to transform the business.
Exactly.
And transforming a cost center into a potential revenue center.
It's such a bizarre dichotomy that we place in our businesses, or that the labels we place on these departments. Like, what, you know, if your body is like a company, what parts of your body are cost centers and what parts are profit centers? Again, an insane model. Like, that's an insane way to look at yourself. It all works together, right? And yet these smart people come into their businesses and they say, okay, you guys are cost centers. I need to give my attention over here. But there's so much magic if we can get that cross-pollination going and really actualize these functions that are just, you know, chomping at the bit to be released in their organization.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Completely agree with you.
So where does the confidence, you know, at some level, it's kind of a confidence that we need to have to engage in those conversations, right? Like, we have to get into some kind of a debate. Again, it doesn't need to be pounding on the table, screaming across and having an argument, but to change somebody's mind and make them consider something that they thought was no, you know, that they thought there was no real value in, takes a persuasive push and it takes a certain confidence. from your standpoint, where do you see sort of the leakage in people's confidence, and where do you find your confidence to engage in those conversations and to really, you know, put those words on the page that help other people be a catalyst in their companies?
Yeah, well, I think it's in some ways it's a product of the organization. So if people have spent, let's say, 10 years being perceived as a cost center, being perceived as something that, and it's not necessarily true, but being perceived as something that inhibits the business and inhibits business growth, there is a transformation in people's minds to go through. So, well, actually, look, you know, we as a compliance operation are not here to hinder you. We're not here to stop you from doing business. We're actually here to help you to do the right business. We're here to help you to you know, potentially to sell new services, potentially to create new products, potentially to create new revenue opportunities, and it, you know, it's at the end of the day, it comes down to people. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's maybe use an analogy from the, you know, I also did a lot of work in the cyber space, and you know, for decades, cybersecurity was seen as you know, no, now what's the question? And of course, people find ways around it. You know, there are figures out there, quite astounding figures, saying you know, since people have been working from home, they 90%, 90+% of people have found ways around the cyber controls that the organization has put in place, and that can be things like, you know, they sit there with two laptops on the desk, one from the organization, one of their own. Right. Literally, they do half the work on something else, or they find ways around technical controls in order to do what they need to do. Right. Now, you know, if we look at 18 months of how do you do cyber awareness training in this new paradigm of people working from home, people doing, you know, who inevitably are doing these things they shouldn't do. That then, on the one hand, it's part of it is culture, and the other hand of it is actually understanding what is it people are trying to do, right. Why is it that they're trying to do it, why is it that sending their client a you know, WhatsApp message is something they're doing when they know that that's something they shouldn't be doing,
right.
And ultimately, there must be a deficiency in the solutions that the organization is providing, and you know, and that has brought about a whole wave of, well, how do we as an organization enable people to work in a secure manner? How do we manage, you know, how if there are requirements, and you know, things like Zoom, for example, you know, went from you know, virtually no deployment to every desktop in the world
right,
using the thing almost overnight. That can, you know, you can apply the same principles to regulatory compliance. So, you know, what are we trying to do that is making us seen as an inhibitor, and how can we be closer to what the business is trying to do? I don't know if I'm explaining this
is
very well, but you know, how can we be closer to what the firm is trying to do, and find ways to enable the firm to you know, tap into those potential profit pools without doing so in a non-compliant way? How can we become the enabler of business growth rather than the inhibitor of business growth? I think it takes both sides. I think it, you know, there needs to be an openness from a new business perspective to Actually, we need to listen to compliance. Actually, we need to engage the compliance departments in this journey. But also from the compliance perspective, not no, you can't do it,
right,
but how can you do it in a way that is sensible, in a way that is compliant, is a way that's not going to get us into trouble.
I mean, I love how you put that, because it really frames out that this is really just a mindset shift at some level. Like, compliance exists, reg tech exists in most organizations at some level. At this point, we're not sort of saying, hey, we need to be a thing. We are already a thing. We need to just kind of change how we interact with the business and interact with those decision makers in the company with that little mindset shift to say, hey, I have some insights you might not be considering. I have some different tweaks here that we might want to do because people are trying to sort of color outside the lines, or they're going the long way around the block. If we can give them some shortcuts that, again, are in a compliant way, we can probably save some time and save some efficiencies. But it's like right there. It's right there at our fingertips. We just have to do a couple of little things, a couple of tweaks to the tools we have in place, a couple of tweaks to our mindset, start reaching out and doing things a little bit differently. And it's going to be really exciting, I think, over the next 5 to 10 years as we ascend from this cost center kitty table to the bit, you know, to the table where the adults are talking about strategy and dollars and cents and things like that.
Yeah. And we need a seat at that table.
We do.
That's the point.
But we need to bring that seat to the table. They're not going to be like, hey, come on up here. We got an extra seat. We need to show our worth and show why we deserve to be at that table. And what's nice is that, kind of to your point, this is not a game of smoke and mirrors. We're not selling somebody snake oil here. We have actual insights that they don't know about that we can put into the mix and can ultimately, you know, through the machinations of our business, lead to better results. But it takes that kind of catalyst within ourselves to push forward.
Yeah, that's it. And it's about using the data that is requested by regulators in an intelligent way to unlock business value. And suddenly, at some point, there'll be a shift between we do this because the regulators
right.
ask for it, and we do this because the business needs it.
Right.
And a side effect is that the regulators get the information that they need.
That's exactly
and,
right.
and that's exactly where you swap from being perceived as being a pure cost center into something that is integral to the future of the business.
Yeah, that is the nugget. That is the seed that if we can speak that into people's lives and they can start doing that, we're going to be very close to hitting this tipping point. As you look into your crystal ball, I'm sure you have that with you. If you pull your crystal ball out and we fast forward 10 years, what do you think has changed? Do you think we'll see any kind of separation between, you know, companies who get it and those who don't with respect to reg tech and the use of data and so forth?
Yeah, I think we're already seeing that difference. So it's clear that when a regulator or a supervisor goes into a firm where technology is being used, there's a certain, okay, how do you use the technology? How do you get the data that we need? Oh, okay, I see that you get the right values from the right place, or that you have the right checks and the right balances in place in order to meet those regulatory obligations.
Right.
And when they go into an organization where they don't have that in place, and you know, it's well, show me the records. Okay, we'll have to go in the back room and we pull out a stack of paper files.
Right.
And you know, they then approach those ones in a very different way,
right.
and they start to ask very different questions. So I think that is, you know, that journey has clearly started. From a business perspective, you know, if we roll down even a few years down the road, firms who have really embraced technology in the process, in that end-to-end process, and are using technology, you know, let's say something simple like, you know, customer onboarding and client due diligence.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing that in a technology-centric way, if you're gathering all the data using technology, you're doing all the checks on the data you have gathered, whether that be the authenticity of the documents that you've been provided, or the individual who's presenting themselves, or the organization in the case of an institutional client.
Mm-hmm.
you're already doing that and you've already got that workflow in place, the likelihood is that the customer experience is going to be much, much better. So an organization where I walk in and I present my documents and they, you know, they take the information they need and can give me a decision real time. Yes, you are who you say you are. Yes, the documents you've presented are your documents. You genuinely are that person. You're not on any sanctions lists. You're not politically exposed. You're, you know, the organizations you're representing, the, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the customer experience is a very positive one. Right. I can start doing business with that organization very quickly, you know, maybe even in real time.
Yeah, right.
I go in and I've presented all my stuff and I can make an investment there and then, or I can make an investment, you know, in an hour or so. Somebody who does all that process in paper, does all that process by hand, not only probably doesn't have the same level of confidence in the checks that they're carrying out because a, you know, a visual check of a document vis-a-vis an electronic check of a document, you know, is it potentially exposing us to counterfeits, you know, stolen documents, et cetera, et cetera. But the actual customer experience may be much, much worse. You know, if you say, well, okay, present the documents and in a week's time, we'll be able to deal with you. You know, our customer's going to hang around, and I imagine, you know, the further down that road we get, the harder it's going to be for organizations who haven't put in place those technology solutions, who haven't put in place the technology enabled workflows to you know, different points in the business,
right.
to really work in a customer-centric way. Customers are going to say, well, look, you know, you want me, I want a simulation of this situation. Oh, well, you know, come back in 2 days.
Yeah, or 2 weeks even. Hey, I got to run a bunch of paper processes here. Speed to business, you know, is hindered by all of this, all these checks and things that we may need to do given the situation that we're talking about. Yeah.
Exactly, and you know, you can apply that throughout the customer life cycle. So one thing, onboarding a client, it's another thing doing business with the client. You know, the customers expect business on their terms. They expect to be able to interact with technology. They expect to be able to do business
right.
whenever and wherever they want. They, you know, they expect an instant response,
right.
and that has become probably even more so
right.
over the course of the pandemic, where people have engaged much more with technology than they have done. The end result, if in 10 years' time you're trying to do things manually, you have workflows that are not streamlined, you don't have at least some level of robotic process automation in place, you're going to be left behind. You might not even be in business in 10 years' time.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, if it's like swimming through molasses to do business with you, then, you know, you're not going to be doing business too long.
Yeah. It's okay if it's the same everywhere, but if
right.
if it's like that with you, but the guy across the street can do everything in 10 minutes and while you're sitting there, or even you don't need to go across the street, you do it from home.
Right.
You do it with you sit there with your phone or your tablet and you do the whole thing in a painless fashion, but still a compliant, and in fact, probably even more compliant fashion. Who's going to get the business?
Yeah,
is it
exactly.
you, or is it the guy who does everything by hand? I think that the answer is obvious.
You know, the thing I was struck with during this conversation, which is pretty obvious, obviously, to you, but there's people at the end of all of this stuff. We're not just compliance officers over a pool of data. We're compliance officers over a pool of data that represents people and how people interact with our systems mm-hmm. and with our business mm-hmm. and so forth. And I think if we myopically lose sight of that, then we're going to just feed into that reputation that many organizations or many departments have of being that, you know, I love how you put it. You said, the answer's no, now what's the question? Like that thing, we need to break that archetype. We need to break that sort of stereotype. And I think a really quick way to do that is to kind of bring the human element into it and recognize that there are humans at the other end of these things. And if we can actualize those experiences in a more meaningful way, the odds of us changing that moniker or whatever, you know, is kind of cast on us is going to be accelerated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And embracing technology in the regulatory environment, on the one hand, helps us to get real visibility of the environment that we're managing, mm-hmm. but also gives us visibility of opportunities that we might not have even known exist,
right,
with our clients and in the wider market.
Right. So this has been a great conversation. I appreciate you coming on. How can people find you? How can they learn more about you, and how can they get in touch?
Yeah. So I am quite well known in social media, as you mentioned, LinkedIn, Twitter. You know, there's a lot of following there. So do reach out to me there. You can you can send me a connection request. You can send me a message. Always, I always like to meet new people. I always like to get different insights, to understand where different people are on that journey. So do get in touch with me, and I would be delighted to speak with you.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, Matt. Until next time.